And welcome to Real Career Talk, a monthly podcast series brought to you by the network BICP, where we come together to have real career-based conversations with internal AT&T and external leaders in a variety of fields who share their career stories and give real holistic career advice. I am your host, Andrea Lim. And for this episode, we're going to talk about the power of small wins. With me today is Corey Anthony, Senior Vice President of Engineering and Operations, with core responsibilities including the engineering and operations for AT&T's mobility and voice core networks, common IP backbone network, technology space engineering and management, transport and cloud engineering, as well as global monitoring and surveillance of AT&T's network, Tier 3 advanced technology, technological support, business continuity planning, and AT&T's Global Technology Operations Center, which provides centralized command operations. I need to slow down. Prior to his current role, he was AT&T's Chief Diversity Officer, where he was responsible for leveraging AT&T's diversity and inclusion strategy, programs, and partnerships to drive innovation and growth, where he also oversaw the company's learning and development efforts, including leadership development programs, talent identification, talent acquisition, and all learning under the AT&T University brand. Throughout his career, he has held leadership roles across AT&T in its wireless, marketing, finance, network operations, human resources, and global customer service organizations. Corey gives back to his community by serving on the boards of directors for Junior Achievement and Dallas CASA, C-A-S-A. Mm-hmm. He is a passionate advocate for diversity and inclusion. He is co-founded the chapter of AT&T's African American employee group, The Network, for which this podcast is a part of, and today serves on the board of two other employee groups, Inspiration and Oasis. He earned his Bachelor of Business Administration degree with a double major in finance and accounting from Texas A&M. And he lives with his wife, Priscilla, in Dallas with their children, Monty and Riley. And funny enough, my cousin's name is Monty. So love that. So Corey, truly a pleasure to have you join me today. Thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on our podcast.
So thank you, Andrea, for having me. A couple of early observations. So one, clearly my team forced you to say all of these things about me and what I've done in the past to bore the audience with. And then two, I imagine that the folks that are listening in are probably asking this first question before you and I even start. And is, hey, with a dude who has done as much as he's done in many organizations as he's done it, why in the hell are we listening to him about on career advice? Because clearly he can't find anything that he can do well enough that he can build a career in one space. So So those are probably the early questions. And then I also have to share this before we get started, because you sparked the thought at the end when you said, hey, Liv's with, you know, my wife, Priscilla, and my two kids, Monte and Riley. And that is true to some extent. As of, I guess, last night, yesterday, I returned from, I had a business trip out to Seattle. I got home last night. That was the first night, Andrea, that my wife and I spent as empty nesters. Last week, we dropped my daughter. We dropped her off at Spelman in Atlanta, and we dropped my son off at Howard in D.C. So if I'm a little loopy today and a little emotional, it's probably a result of that. My son, this is his second year, so that's easy. But my baby girl, this is her first time. You know, she's a freshman. And so
yes.
I'm struggling with her leaving the nest.
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, congratulations on raising amazing children. No doubt. I'm from Atlanta. Love Spelman. Like I said, I already have an affinity because my cousin's name is Monty and that's your son's name. So kudos to both you and Priscilla for getting to that point. And I can only imagine how shaky that should be. But this is a perfect segue for a couple of my like softball questions, but equally along the theme about small wins, because you have done so much, you know, to prepare your family for now some of their small wins, which are going to take them on to bigger and better things. And you yourself, yes, incredibly accomplished, which is why I was so excited to have you to discuss this very topic. But my softball questions, we can Google you, right? But yeah. I want to know something about you specifically that we will not find if we Google you.
That you will not find and that I am willing to share that will not incriminate myself. So, you know, I'll share this because I don't think, you know, I never tried this, but I don't think if you Google me, you won't find this. So one of my hobbies now, and it's a passion I've had literally since I was a kid, and I got it from my father and my family, is auto racing. So I grew up drag racing. And one of the things that I do now is I still drag race motorcycles. And then I road race cars. So road racing, think of not like NASCAR, not in big circles.
Right.
But more Formula One type road tracks. And so, yeah, those are a couple of my passions and hobbies now. I don't get a chance to do it as often as I would like. Right. But when I do get the opportunity, man, it is fantastic. I love it.
Oh my God. Well, you got to come to California because, you know, we got that Porsche Experience Center or whatever.
Where you whip and around. I've raced in California, Sonoma Raceway. Nice. My motorcycle. Yeah, I drag race my motorcycle there at Sonoma Raceway.
Fantastic. Oh my God. Okay. And so then my last sort of softball question is, do you have a nickname that only a few people call you? And what is it?
I do not. And it's one of the things my entire life, I always wanted a nickname.
Like
that. It's me. But it's hard to get a nickname out of Corey. Right. I mean,
well, C, they can call you C. What's up, C? Like, you know.
I did. So after New Jack City, I had a few friends would call me C Money. But I was like, I didn't like that character. So like, I don't want to be C Money. So I don't want that. The closest exactly. I've gotten to a nickname was in college. As you mentioned, I went to Texas A&M. And if you haven't picked up on my accent,
yes.
I'm native Texan, but I am a country boy. And so when I would tell folks, they'd ask, like, where are you from? And I said, I'm from Jewett, Texas. And of course, nobody knows where Jewett, Texas is.
Never heard
small
of it.
Yeah. And so in my freshman year, almost all of the upperclassmen on campus would just refer to me as country. They just call me country. But that's probably as close to a nickname as I've ever had was this country.
Oh, man. All right. That's awesome. That is awesome. Let's hope that no one, like when they listen to this, that they start calling you that. But if they do, you know why.
Look, I embrace it. I was born and raised in the country. As I tell folks all the time, Jewett, Texas, basically Central Texas, I call it God's country. I love it. I love it to this day. I still have a lot of family and friends. My father has passed, but my mom is still there. So I'm there a lot. I embrace it. I love it. I am country.
Yes, I hear you. Embrace it all. All right, we're going to get into this conversation a little bit about the power of small wins. So I have to tell you that when I was a child growing up, I was sort of taught to some degree, you know, a part of your sense of worth is like striving and achieving these really big wins. But life can and will throw you curveballs, everything from, you know, needing to move somewhere or meeting someone or work organizational changes. And those kinds of things can sometimes attach with it a sense of loss or discouragement. So I'm really hoping that we get into our conversation where we're talking about ways in which we can navigate through peaks and valleys that, you know, the real problem isn't necessarily, you know, what you fear that you have not achieved because you don't have these big wins or you don't have these big titles, but more about recognizing small wins and how that can create, you know, new opportunities. And they're all significant, right? So let me first find out from you, when you heard this theme about the power of small wins, what maybe was the first thing that came to your mind when it came to attaching that to career success?
Yeah, look, I believe it's a great subject. It's something that we all should be really contemplative about and put a lot of thought into sort of how we address this issue. But when I first heard, a couple of things came to mind. So one of my prior roles, I had responsibility for what we call the employee value proposition. And so that's in essence just saying, hey, why does a person choose to either start their career at AT&T or continue their career at AT&T, right? What does that value proposition look like for them? And so the team and I did a lot of research, hearing from employees internally, as well as external stakeholders and SMEs, to help understand what that looks like for employees. So I come at it from two perspectives, this question around small wins. One is from all of that research that I did in that capacity, and then also my own personal experience over the course of my career. The good news is, Andrea, the two intersect in terms of what I learned from both. And that is for me and some of the folks that I've been in mentoring circles with or mentoring relationships with have heard me say this a thousand times. Before we even get to the conversation about small wins and why it is important or what the impact is, from a career perspective, and what I would argue, Andrew, not even just from a career perspective, but from a life perspective, I think you have to start with something that's foundational, but is powerful. And that is, how do you define success? Mm-hmm. Because you think about it, it's fairly intuitive. I don't even know what a win looks like if I don't know what success looks like.
Absolutely.
Because until I answer that question, what I define as a win or a loss could be different, right? And so you start with, what does success look like for you? So in this context, we're talking career. But in your, you know, in your eyes, what does a successful career look like for you? Start with that and define that and be really clear about that. And then be really honest with yourself as to whether or not you have conviction around that. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, and the reason why that is so important, because you have to take that first step. Once you've done that, now you're on a pathway to say, okay, I am going to be doing things. My objective is to do things that are going to be meaningful to me. They're going to be meaningful in my life, in my work life, in my inner life. They're going to be meaningful. And that's powerful. And so when you do that, now you can recognize small wins, large wins, losses, et cetera, because it's defined and you have a scope of view here that makes it easy to see that. The research that we did again on EVP was clear about that. And then in my personal experience, Andrea, I think that is foundational.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And I love this idea about conviction, but help me out or help listeners out. Doing a little at a time is definitely the best way to reach, you know, your big ambitious goals once you actually have in your mind what it is that you want to do. But talk to me as if, you know, you were just starting out and you don't know those strategies or tips of identifying, you know, where you want your career to go or identifying who you want to be. So how did you come to join AT&T? What was it about the company or what was it about what you wanted to do in life that set you up? And if you can discuss it in the terms of tips that you can give to my listeners, that would be fantastic.
Absolutely, I can. So for me, it started when I was still on campus. I joined a fraternity when I was, you know, on campus, and I was very active outside of my fraternity and other student organizations, and not just as a member of those organizations, but leading those organizations. And so that's where I really first tapped into kind of this love that I have around leading people. Mm-hmm. Right. Just leading people and being able to motivate people both internally and externally to accomplish shared objectives. And so it was fun. And what I learned on, and this is why I recommended to my own two kids who are in, I guess not kids anymore, my own right. Young adults that are in college. And when I talk to our interns, et cetera, is it's a great place to hone skills, leadership skills, because the one thing you do not have on a college campus when you're working in a student organization, and or if you were, we all are now as adults in our careers, if you're, you know, part of a not-for-profit or in network, right, and you're leading in some capacity, the one thing you do not have is position power. Mm-hmm. So you have personal power, but you don't have position power. And so it forces you to learn how to use your personal power in a way to lead effectively. And what I mean by that, right, if you're working in network, Andrew, you're one of the leaders in network. And so when you and a team are working on something trying to get accomplished, you have to use your personal power to motivate folks, because you don't have position power, meaning you can't fire them.
Right.
You know, in that capacity, right, you're not going to impact their paycheck, whether or not they get a connection award or pay increase. So you don't have that position power. You rely on your personal power. But guess what? When we're in the workplace, in whatever role, in the role that I'm in now, I should be relying on my personal power far, far more than I rely on my position power.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I do that, then I can have a better shot at longer sustained performance out of a team, more so than if I'm using a hammer all the time with the team with my position power. Right. So I saw that early on when I was in college. I fell in love with it. When I was coming out of college, I had done a number of internships with three different organizations. I had job offers from all of them. But the thing that stood out from AT&T, which, by the way, at the time when I joined was Southwestern Bell, is they had a leadership development program. And I had not even done an internship with them, but I was leading a student organization on campus. Guess who one of the donors was of that organization? Supporters happened to be Southwestern Bell. They were smart. They sent a recruiter down the campus to present us with the funding that they were giving the organization. And so he and I, you know, were talking, and he mentioned this program, and it just took off from there. So that's what attracted me to the business, was the opportunity to lead teams early on. So my first role in the company, I was leading a team of 16, 17 people.
Okay.
And I absolutely loved it. And so that's been sort of, when we talk about defining success, that's been a huge component of it for me, is I want to be in a role where I am working with a group of folks with these shared objectives, and I'm able to lead that team to accomplish those. And so that's always been a guiding light, in which allows me to identify those small wins when they come.
Right. Wow. That's phenomenal. And, you know, you definitely sort of, and it is one of those things I think a lot of people struggle with. You figured out what you can fall in love with and then want to do, no matter how many times your career has transitioned you into so many different roles, right? But give me a little sense, because it takes a lot of confidence to, one, figure out what you want to do. It also takes a lot of confidence to recognize that, to recognize small wins. But talk to me about if there was a period of time where you maybe had a setback.
Yeah.
And it might have been a little difficult to recognize the small win. How did you motivate yourself to overcome that setback? So give us a little bit of that story.
I'm glad you mentioned setbacks, because we do talk a lot about small wins, and small wins are accelerators, right? Because one of the most important things any of us can do in our career is just ensure it's constant progress, however you define it. Because remember, you define success. And so whatever that goal and objective is, are you progressing towards it or not? Right. I mean, so that, I'm rarely binary about anything. But in terms of progress, are you progressing towards it or not? And so setbacks is really important, because early on, you have to figure out and learn a really effective coping mechanism when you experience setbacks, because we all will. We all experience them in our personal lives. We experience them in our work lives, relationships, you name it. You're going to experience a setback. For me, I've always dealt with them. I've had plenty of them over the years, right? Some larger than others, but I've had plenty of them. One of the first things I do, and this is not applicable for me, at least in my professional life, but it's applicable to me across my entire life. One of the first things I do is I put it into perspective. Whatever the setback is, I take a breath, right? I just take a breath, and it's probably not nearly as bad as I think it is in the moment. right, is probably not going to be nearly as impactful as I think it will be in the moment. So I just take a breath and I take a step back and then I look around and say, hey, yeah, while this may be really stink for me, but look at what's going on with this person and that person and this person. I'm good.
Yeah.
In our professional lives, where maybe a project doesn't go the way we want it to go, and that is a setback. But look around the business, and where you one of the folks that got a letter a few weeks ago that said, hey, you no longer have a role in this business.
Right.
That's a much larger setback than me missing, you know, a plan objective for the first quarter. So I keep things in perspective, number one. Number two, never lose sight of how you define success. Because that's really what you're going for. And so the setback, okay, got it. Still have my eye, keep my eye on that objective, right? Stay focused. Stay focused. That's where that conviction I talked about, Andrea, came in. That's why you have to have conviction on however you define success.
Right.
Because if not, when you do have these setbacks, you will get off path. You will easily get off path, off track when you don't have conviction. So if you have conviction, keep it in perspective, stay focused, then you can work through any setback, I believe, that you encounter.
Yeah, phenomenal. You're so wise. I'm not kidding. And I don't mean that.
If you fail as much as I failed over the years, so you learn from failures, right? So
yeah. And you know what? That's interesting because a lot of people think that failure is all negative. There's a lot that you can learn from. You hope not to repeat those same failures, but there's a lot of growth that can come from the failure. And you clearly, beyond your accomplishments, I would love to know how you recognized and found any mentors that helped guided you along the way, because I feel not only recognizing, you know, how you define success and then having the conviction and the confidence to go after that, however you lay those steps out, along the way, you probably need some help. People may be struggling with how to find those key mentors that will help them clear some of these paths and clear some of these cobwebs out of their heads. So first tell me who, if anyone, are some of your key mentors and how did you find them?
Yeah. So what I'm getting ready to share with the team, with the audience, I don't necessarily recommend you do it this way. Just by grace, it worked out for me really well. I came into the business, and that was one of the things that I didn't have a full appreciation of, is the importance and the value of having a mentor. I just didn't have it when I first started. Luckily, and that's why I'm saying I don't regret it, was just by grace for me. When I first started, there is a leader who's retired. Many of you who are listening will recognize the name. His name is Ray Wilkins. And he was a senior executive in this company when I started. I just happened to start in his region at the time, the Kansas City market area. And Ray was one of the leaders who really invested in new talent coming into the business. And so that just happened naturally as a result of that. Me just so being in the right place at the right time. It was not by design on my part. It was being in the right place at the right time. And so he sort of grabbed me by the back of the neck and saw all of the crazy stuff that I was doing. And so our mentor relationship sort of developed from that, right, where he was really coaching me because he had vested interest in me being successful.
Sure.
And so then I learned the value of it. And then at that point, I really, you know, that was something, because one of the things, I invest in individuals, I invest in people. And that sort of comes natural for me. I love people. And so I end up having these relationships with people that I interact and that I work with. And again, being at the right place in the right time, the people took an interest in me. And so I've had fantastic mentors beyond Ray. And here's the other thing that I've had. Matter of fact, I've had more mentors in this latter category than the former category.
Wow.
You know, it's always great to have executives and leaders as mentors, right? Because they can teach you some things and give you some insights that you otherwise wouldn't get in the space that you're working in. But I will tell you what has been equally, if maybe not even more valuable and impactful for me, for my peer mentors and people that mentor me to this day, that I hate to use the term because I hate this, but levels, but they're not, you know, they may not be officers in the business. They're different areas of the business, but they mentor me today. And so I lean heavily on peer mentors and people that are deeper in the organization, because my thing is, look, man, if I can learn from you, right? If I can learn from you and if I can offer something to you of value, then that relationship probably can work. And so I've done that. So yeah, the mentor is incredibly valuable. Look, I tell people all the time, Andrea, if you don't have, you're listening to us now and you don't have a mentor already, or at least one or two mentors in this business and outside of this business, then that's priority number one for you.
Yes.
Right. We'll talk about small wins and everything, but that could be a small, huge win for you, is go get a mentor. And don't, it doesn't have to be an officer or some senior exec. No, go find someone. Again, you define what success looks like for you, right? You've all done that. You know, you should. And then, you know, people who have insights and experiences that can help shed some light for you on how to get there. There you go.
Right.
And that person can be a technician. That person can be a VP. It doesn't matter. But go find a mentor who can help you grow.
Absolutely. Help you grow. And also be the one to make you look in the mirror, right? Because I think part of not just figuring out what success needs to look like, sometimes you got to recognize your strengths and your weaknesses. And it's a really good idea to have mentors who will let you know, hey, you do this incredibly well. This is a place and space that make sure it fits with you. You do need to have mentors that'll be incredibly honest.
That is such a good piece of advice you just gave all of us. Yeah, your mentor, you need to be, it needs to be someone who can give you good, candid, direct, constructive feedback.
Yeah.
And so that's why I said earlier when I used the term Ray Wilkins grabbed me by the back of my neck.
That's
what he was doing. Like, here, young buck. No, like, you can't do it that way. Right. And right. And peers are some of the best folks to give you that feedback because you work with them the most.
Yes.
You go sit down in front of some VP, they barely know your work product.
Right.
Right. They rarely get exposed to you. But the people you work with every day, hell, they know you. They know how you move in this business. They know how you treat people. They know how you react, how you respond, which situations you do either or the other. They know all of this about you. And so find that person who will say, no, dude, you didn't handle that well at all.
Right.
Like, you know, and give you that feedback, man, because you'll grow from that.
Exactly. Corey, we're coming up to the end, but I got almost like two more questions. And the first one is this. So, you know, a lot of times we have all these small wins, but we don't feel that we're getting recognized for them. So what advice would you give someone about how to not only just recognize their small wins, but get them exposed so that other ones can recognize them too?
Yeah, that's a challenge, right? It can be very tricky at times because we want to be recognized and acknowledged for the contributions that we are making. At the same time, you don't want to be the person running around waving your own flag and tooting your own horn all the time, right? Because that can become counterproductive. So what I often say to people, Andrew, is you have to do this one. My answer to this is not a one size fits all by any stretch. But there are some commonalities that are really important. Number one, always lead with your work product.
Okay.
Right? Always lead with your work product. So results. Results, like, that's the absolutely best thing you can do for recognition are results, not just effort, because a lot of people want to get recognized for effort.
Yes.
And yes, there's a place for that. But more importantly, you want to get recognized for results. So you start there. Then some of you, I can hear you screaming out, well, damn it, Corey, I'm getting great results and nobody got it. That happens in the business. So then what I would say is, have direct conversations with your supervisor. Start there and just say, hey, Andrew, you know, look, and this is the third quarter in a row that I've exceeded all of my objectives. Right. And I don't know, or I don't feel like you are acknowledging or recognizing this performance because it's not reflected in my performance rating. It's not reflected in the feedback that I'm getting from you. So I want to have this conversation with you because I want to ensure that you and I are on the same page in terms of how we're defining success in this role.
Yes.
Here's how I'm defining it. And I feel like I'm meeting and exceeding those, but I need to make sure you are defining it the same way.
Yes.
Because, and the reason why I emphasize that, Andrew, more times than not, when I go back to my HR days and I would get in the middle of these and get involved in these, more times than not, the person and their supervisor were not on the same page.
Right.
So they felt like they're not being recognized, and their supervisor's like, no, because hell, Corey's not meeting my expectations.
Exactly. Exactly.
So do those two things first. That ends up addressing those two things in 90% of the cases, you know, work. There are the corner cases where you have a supervisor, because it's big, we're a big company, 157,000 people here. Most of our supervisors are really good. Some are not. I mean, that's just the law of large numbers. And so sometimes you're going to have a person where they just do a poor job of that, even after you have the conversation with them. And those are those rare instances where I do think it is appropriate for you to go to that person's supervisor as well. Right? Always start with yours. Try there. But if you know, like, I'm killing it, I know I'm meeting, exceeding up, and you're still not being recognized for that, then yeah, I think it's fine to sit down with your HR support, have a conversation with them, you know, that person's supervisor. Because at the end of the day, nobody is more vested in your career than you.
Exactly.
Right. Or are they damn sure shouldn't be anyone more invested in your career than you. Right. So at the end of the day, it's on you. But go through all of those steps first. Sometimes people just want to immediately, you know, they get irritated one Thursday afternoon and then they start sending me notes and Stanky right. and everybody else. And then we get involved and realize, yeah, this is not nearly how you articulated or portrayed it. So start at those first things first. And again, 90% of the time, it's addressed. But in those corner cases where it's not, then do the other things.
Absolutely. Yeah. I truly believe that, you know, your results should speak for themselves, but make sure you have them, right? And then if they're not speaking as loudly as you think they should, then yes, sit down with your team, with your leadership, start there with, hey, can we talk through my journey? And this is how I see it. Are you seeing the same things? Because you definitely want to make sure you not only have figured out your definition of success, but you understand what's expected so that you can see if those two can meet in the middle.
I think it's worth noting too, because I suspect most of the time when people ask that question, in part is because, hey, they are interested, right, in growing and advancing in the business, taking on more responsibility, et cetera. So you should also understand in that context, meeting your objectives is not success.
Correct.
It's not. Right. So I have this conversation with a lot of people. They want to come and talk to me. They're frustrated. They haven't gotten opportunities. And I always first thing we talk about are results. Mm. And then the person's like, yeah, I'm meeting my objectives. OK, that's not success. That's table stakes.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
If you're not meeting objectives, then we're talking having a whole different conversation. So talk to me where you're exceeding. Talk to me where your contributions are exceeding the expectations of your leadership team. Because those are the individuals that are going to be considered and viewed as top talent in this company and competitive for opportunities to take on broader, more responsibility. Absolutely. If all you can do is say, I've met my objectives for the last 3 years, okay, congratulations. So has 76% of the people.
Right.
So you're not going to stand out for doing that. You really got to go and exceed what those objectives are. And folks look at what you've contributed to the business is like, it's noteworthy. It stands out. It's noticeable. Can't be in the middle of the pack.
No. And not only do you have to exceed, there is the consistency, which has to
absolutely. Yeah, not just one good quarter. Yeah, one good month. Hey, I was number one on the scorecard for July. Okay, what about the last 18? No, that's a very good point, Andrew. But if I didn't know any better, I would think, have you spent any time in talent development or HR?
No, but prior to joining, I've had a lot of different roles in a lot of different industries. So I feel I've gotten this kind of like big old bubble, But I love hearing stories such as yours, Corey, of how you came to be who you are and recognize, and then giving back. I feel this is the kind of information and just real conversations that I think people want to hear, because sometimes you can look at someone and feel that they are a little untouchable, right? And then you recognize, like, wait, they've had blunders, they've had challenges, and I can learn from what they share. So,
yeah, I often tell folks, and you've already picked up on this in the 20 minutes we've spent together. There is, you know, you talk about my career and opportunities. There isn't anything special about me. It has been one, just a lot of blessings, right? To be in the right place at the right time, surrounded by the right people. And then my part of it is make the best of every opportunity that's put in front of me. Right. And so I do that. But look, yeah, there isn't, you'll never hear Corey saying I'm the smartest guy in the room. I'm this. No, man. There's a lot of people who, if they had the same opportunities at the same time that I had, then they could have been, you know, doing some of the same things. So a lot of it is being at the right place at the right time. But you absolutely have to take advantage and make the best of every opportunity that's put in front of you. And do that in a way that hardly anyone else is doing.
Yep.
And you do that, then opportunities lead to the opportunity. That's why the small wins are important. Small wins build on each other, right?
Yes,
and that's progress. Small wins lead to progress. And so that's really what we're all doing. That's what we're trying to do here, man. You're progressing towards whatever that objective is you've set for yourself.
So my final question, since we're coming to the end of this, and I could talk to you for hours, that's for sure. What is the one question around the power of small wins you wish I would have asked you, and how would you answer it?
Wow, that's a hard one. The question that I wish you would have asked and you didn't. This is one that came out in the research and in my own personal experience. Because you and I talked about both of these today. We talked about small wins and we talked about setbacks.
Yes.
A question that I think is relevant, you didn't ask it, but is relevant, is which one is more powerful? Small wins or setbacks? And I think I can tell by the look on your face, you already know what I'm going to say. And we have to keep our antenna up for this. But all of the research is really, really clear. Industrial psychology, human psychology, it's very clear. Setbacks.
Yes.
Are more powerful than the small wins. And you may say, well, Cole, why in the heck would you mention that, Corey? Because we have to be very diligent, very mindful about how we manage setbacks. Mm. Setbacks are powerful. Negative energy is always really, really powerful, right? We've all seen and probably had experience. You can have a room of people. You bring a positive person in the room, a negative person in the room. They can bring the entire room down. You interject a positive person in there and it's hard as hell to bring the whole room up. Negative energy is just powerful, right? Look in media today, TV, social media, everything. Negative energy is really powerful. So setbacks is just a form of negative energy. So figure out however you do this in your own way that works for you personally, but you have to manage setbacks really well. If not, they will get you off track and you will miss the power of the small wins. Matter of fact, you won't even see them when they're right there staring you in the face. Oh, manage your setbacks. Manage your setbacks.
Manage your setbacks. I could not agree with you more, because I definitely feel we fear setbacks, right? We fear that is going to be something you won't overcome. But the real problem isn't that you fear a setback, is that you may don't have all of the right tools and strategies to learn from them. And recognize how you react to them. Oh my God, this has been the most powerful conversation I have had. And I definitely thank you. I'm not trivializing it, but like, you were like a big win for me, but this was a small win because I got so many other episodes to do. No, I'm kidding. Anyway.
Corey, how you doing?
I cannot thank you enough for coming on to the show and spending this amount of time with me. I know that the network listeners, including myself, have learned a lot. And anyone who's actually going to listen to this is going to walk away with some real nuggets of things that I don't doubt that they can put into practice, like starting today, of recognizing the power of small wins. So, gosh, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. You were fantastic. So I asked a question about some of your prior experiences. And look, network has a special place for me, as you mentioned years ago.
Didn't you co-found it?
Yeah, I helped co-found a chapter there in Kansas City. And so, I've been involved with this organization basically my entire career here. And so I love it. I'm involved today. I have mentoring circles and stuff. I have a lot of fun with the organization. I learn from the organization, and it's just one of the many ways that if I can, you know, contribute, plant a seed somewhere, I think that it's helpful. Because again, I've been very, very blessed since I've been here. And so all of the work I do, those organizations you mentioned outside of AT&T, that my wife and I'm on the board of JA, CASA, which is all focused towards kids and community. This is about giving back, man.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up fantastic family, dual parents, my father and my mother, incredible. That's why we do the work with CASA, because these are abused kids that have been removed from their households. They don't have that blessing that I had
in that way.
Junior achievement, right? I believe one of the most powerful forces that can help communities, and specifically Black and brown communities, is economic empowerment.
Yes.
And so financial literacy is the underpinning of economic empowerment. So there is a reason why I'm so engaged and have been with JA since 1995. And so these are ways that I give back, because so much of me been given to me and I've been blessed. So to be able to take some time out, and then you're great at what you're doing here, and have some fun with you. Well worth it. So I'm always, hey, when I can help, I'm always willing to help. I will say this, though, to the audience before we leave, Andrew, and please take this in the loving way that it is intended to the audience. I talked about mentors because I've learned this lesson over the years. I cannot, because I know many of you were like, well, I want to reach out, and they'll call my office and Sheila, can I get some time? And I just know that, like, if a limit is here, I'm already like up here in terms of the folks that I spend time with and mentoring. And many of you on this call know that's true, because I'm already working with you. So I literally don't have the capacity to take on more at this point. So I'm not trying to be a butthead about it. It's out of love, but I don't. Now, you know, I'm more than happy to try and help direct you and partner you with someone in organizations. The EGs network is a great example.
Yes.
Any of the EGs, all of them have different programs that are, structured towards trying to help pair mentees with mentors. I'm out of bandwidth for it. I'm out of bandwidth for it.
Yes.
But I love you.
I don't doubt it. And I think, again, if for nothing else, we have this recording. So anyone who wants to kind of listen to you give them some advice, this is what we have it for.
There you go. So. And we have some great resources. Go out to HR One Stop. There are some great resources there. The DE&I internal site has great resources. Absolutely. T University has great resources. So there is a number of really good resources on mentoring, career development, sort of how to navigate some of these things around wins and setting career objectives and goals, all of that. I mean, there are great resources that are available to all of us. Just take advantage of them.
Absolutely. And you help to carve the way for some of that. And we do need to take advantage of all of those things. Because as you said, the most important person who's going to be paying attention to their career is you. So, my God. Thank you so much, Corey. And for all of our listeners, thank you for listening to Real Career Talk. We'll see you next time. Stay powerful.
Thank you.